Howdy, folks. I've been waiting to have today's guest on the show for a very long time, and it's finally happened. So today we're talking travel photography and education with one of the best. Welcome to Camera Shake, where we bring you the insider scoop on all things photography and videography, giving you a unique opportunity to stay ahead of the curve. As always, I'm your host, Kirsten Nuts. And before we get into it, I've got one thing to ask of you. I've noticed that over 65% of our viewers on YouTube and listeners in audio are not actually subscribed to this channel. Well, that is just plain crazy. You can really help us out by hitting that subscribe button. It'll help us get even more amazing guests on the show. Although after this episode, I don't think that's going to be possible at all. Anyway, it's just one click away. It'll take a mere second. Thank you so much. Now, without further ado, let's give it up for today's special guest. He really needs no introduction, but I'll introduce him anyway. Give it up for the man who single-handedly transformed online education, the master of photography, fellow music nut. His photo critiques are feared around the globe. Put your hands together for the one and only Scott Kelby. Scott, man, how are you?
I'm good. I just subscribed, so that, you know, that helps. That helps, right?
Beautiful. That does absolutely help.
That's
yes.
66% now as I'm pulling a whole percent.
Anyway, oh, yeah, yeah. Probably.
Thank you for having me. I've never been introduced as having a feared photo critique. Wow. We're coming in hot.
I know. Well, I'll watch those photo critiques. I'm thinking, I'm always thinking, like, shall I send a picture in? And I'm like, ooh, I better not.
Oh, if you send a picture and you know it's going to go well.
Oh, no.
We're going to be like, nice job, you know. Keep it up.
Yeah. I'll get you bank details work. From you. Yeah, I'll get you bank details afterwards. So.
Hardly.
Phenomenally. Scott, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I've only seen you like a week ago.
Yeah, it was fun. That was great. Your talk at the Adobe event was hilarious and amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that was a lot of fun. Just for those listeners who haven't been following the podcast over the last couple of weeks, if you are listening to this, then you would have seen the Photography Show special episode last week where I did a little bit of a roundup on, you know, what was awesome, what was great at the show. But of course, what also happened was there was a lot of education. And Scott, you've spoken at a number of stages. But there was also an interesting little event on the behind the lens stage. That's what it was.
Yeah, right. That's it. Yeah. They asked us. Adobe asked us to submit a photo with a kind of a crazy story behind it. Maybe something a client asked you to do, or so. Everybody got up, and you had only 2 minutes to tell your story. So it was a neat idea, and it was fun to see everyone's pictures and their stories, and some were really like, whoa, like what? And some were like, okay, but it was fun. It was a very fun evening, and the bar had been open for an hour before, so that made it for an easy crowd.
Yes, it definitely made it much easier for me to get up on stage. That's for sure. That's what the Photography Show is known for. There's lots of fun events like that all over the show. Did you enjoy it? You were there for quite a few days.
Oh, yeah. I was there for, I spoke 3 days in a row, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And that was my second time speaking at the event. I'd spoken there before, and it's a great show. If you haven't been, it's surprising the scope and scale of it. It's giant. It's a giant. It takes 3 days to see everything. And there's so many photo shoots going on the show floor. And this is something that, you know, go back 10 years ago, you were lucky to see one or two booths that had someone, you know, a model or a car or a motorcycle or something set up. And now you're more likely to see, you know, 80, 90 booths with all kinds of setups and photography. And you walk up and they built these elaborate setups and things. I saw somebody with show dogs, like really, really beautifully groomed show dogs. And you could just walk up and take pictures. And, you know, they had all kinds of still lifes, and they had models in every kind of amazing, you know, setups with these elaborate just backdrops and stuff. There was a really convincing one that had, it was a full-size, you know, London telephone booth or English telephone booth with, you know, the Elizabeth Tower. That's the proper name, by the way, renamed for Her Majesty's 75th Diamond Jubilee. Anyway, so Big Ben, basically, in the background, also known officially as the Elizabeth Tower. And it was really well done. I mean, you looked at the shots, and it looked like they were there. It was really well done. There's just a lot of things like that. As you walk around the floor, there were just people shooting everywhere. So there was a ton of education, a ton of photography, you know, opportunities to shoot already lit sets with professional models and professional sets. It's a great, great show. It's got to be the value of the year. Like, where else can you pay that little amount of money and for 3 days just have an amazing experience, photo shoots and classes and education and seeing all the latest new stuff, playing with all the latest new stuff? Nikon had a setup where they had all of their long lenses, and you could just go up and just look all the way across. You know, you could see what's a 600 look like, what's an 800 look like. They had lots of cool stuff everywhere you went. There was just, you know, more stuff to do. It's a wonderful show. It really, really is. It's underrated because it's really a brilliant show.
Yeah, there was lots of fun stuff. There was this whole set that was an upside down room. Did you see that? Where table on the ceiling.
I saw pictures of it, but I didn't see I never went by that actual booth, but I saw people posting pictures from it.
Yeah, that's so much fun. Like models dressed in like flowers. Oh, there's so much stuff going on. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, all the stages, you know, from an educational point of view, it was amazing. When you could, no matter whether you wanted to learn about, studio photography, lighting, Lightroom, Photoshop, even, you know, video editing, there were so many things that were going on, you know, even business related matters, whatever it may be, there was education to be had. And given that if you're a pro, you get in for free. That's even more amazing. I mean, it's the ticket prices are not extortionate anyway, but, you know, I bet there were a lot of people on free tickets in that show.
Well, yeah, you had to apply, right? You had to apply online and, you know, but it was a simple questionnaire. It was, you know, like, what do you do? And, you know, it was pretty simple. And they were like, you're approved and you get the ticket. I was one of the speakers, but they still, for some reason, they made me register. I'm like, okay. You know, so I went and did that's a really unique aspect but that shows you what they're trying to do. They want to attract high quality people. So the vendors have really qualified. They don't want a bunch of tire kickers, people that are just kind of looking. They want people that are really interested in their products and really, you know, want to advance their careers and, you know, their business and invest in their business. So the quality of the attendees there from a vendor's aspect has got to be through the roof. It's got to be phenomenal.
And the quality of the speakers on all the stages was phenomenal as well. It's just, you know, you just don't get an opportunity otherwise to see such high caliber speakers like yourself, for example. You know, and so, yeah, so again, purely from a take-home aspect, like educationally speaking, it was amazing. And also, I thought that the Monday, which is usually known as the pro day, because they always assume that, you know, the general public would come over the weekend, Saturdays and Sundays, and then Mondays would be, you know, professionals. And usually, in the past, you know, from experience, it was always, well, the Monday, probably the footfall's going to be a little bit lower, but actually, it was packed. Ooh.
I thought it was going to be kind of empty on Monday. It was packed out. Yeah, it was a very, very busy show. And you're right. I got to watch a number of different presentations because there's all these different stages. And there was like a stage just dedicated to live shoots. And I watched a very interesting, I wish I could tell you the instructor's name. I came in the middle of the session, so I didn't get his introduction. But he was having people dunk their face into a pool of water. So he had a plexiglass rectangle with water in it, and then he had a light under it and a camera mounted under it, and so you would get a picture. He would get people out of the audience, and they would put this thing over their head, and they would dunk their face, and then he would take the shot. But it really made fascinating portraits lit with gels right underneath, and you could see you look at that and go, Well, yeah, you could do that. Yeah, the water's not splashing anywhere. It's not making a mess in your house or anything. And it's just, you know, plexiglass is luckily pretty cheap. You know, you can go to, I don't know what you would call it in the UK, but in America, it's Home Depot is where we go. And you can buy, you know, 3/4-inch plexiglass, you know, $20 a sheet. And so, or excuse me,
Yeah.
20 quid. 20 quid a sheet.
That's
So anyway,
20
you could build this little enclosure and dip your head in a couple of gels, and it made for you really, really unique, you know, because people would stick their mouth, their hand in their blow, and there'd be bubbles coming out, and guys with beards. It was really just stuff you're not going to see anywhere else. You're like,
You know what that
I never
reminds
really
me of?
thought of that.
That reminds me of, I used to have a dog. Well, I still have a dog, but I used to have, back in the day, I used to have a Dalmatian. And his party trick was that if you threw one of his treats in his water bowl, he would dive for it. And it was the most hilarious thing because he would breathe out as he was trying to get to the treat at the bottom of the bowl. And then at some point, we used a glass bowl so we could watch him like with half his head out of it. It was hilarious. I mean, you know, I'm hoping the animal rescue people are not listening, but it was he had fun. It was fun, you know.
Oh, no, I'm
But
sure
it,
he loved it. Dogs are
yeah.
highly motivated by treats. They'll do just about anything.
Absolutely. I always thought that would make an amazing like animal portrait series. Let's get
Yeah,
these
it would have.
dogs.
That'd have been great. Yeah.
What was your favorite thing about the photography show?
Well, for me, it's seeing people I haven't seen in a long time, right? So the pandemic kind of, you know, so I got to see people that I'll see online, right? You know, or that, but I don't get to actually, you know, interact with unless you're there. And I think that's one of the wonderful things that a show like the Photography Show does. It brings us together. We need community. And yeah, we're able to do Zoom and we're able to do calls like that and stuff, and it's nice, and it's a great substitute for the real thing. But, you know, relationships are made in person, and you can do a lot of things by email and text and all that, but in-person contact is where relationships are really formed. And so being able to see friends of mine that live in the UK that, you know, I only get to see at these shows, for me personally, that was my favorite part, you know. That was one. Number two is the education. It is neat to go by and just, you can just stop and watch a few minutes of something and you're like, wow, that's really cool. So I stopped by the Adobe booth. There was a post-production stage where everybody that was there was doing post. And I don't shoot a lot of video. I'm not really a video guy. I have a video team where I work, right? They do. So if I need video, I'll go, can you guys do this thing? And you know, that's their life, and they're very good at it. It's their, you know, it's their thing. But I watch some people editing video and doing things in both Apple's Final Cut and in Premiere Pro and things, and I'm like, this is pretty good. This is, you know, it's like it almost made me want to do it. Like, maybe I should start doing some video, you know. So I think that's one of the neat things, because I think when it comes to education, like, we tend to go to the things that we're most interested in. I'm a portrait photographer, so I'm going to the portrait class. But sometimes you can learn a lot about portraiture from a wedding class, right? There are things that you would learn about lighting and about emotion and about all kinds of things, posing, everything that you can learn from a wedding class that you can take and apply. You can learn things from a sports photography, from wildlife photography. There's so many things that transfer over to other genres, and that's what's nice about it. You don't have to get a ticket, you don't have to wait in line, you know, it's just like there's education happening everywhere around every corner. You know, the only thing you can hope for is that there's an empty seat, but there's always standing room only. I mean, there's people standing, there were people sitting in the aisles in my classes, and I had people standing in the back. So it's not like you can't get in, right? You can get in and you can see. It's like it, you know, it's just it's an atmosphere that is very conducive to learning. And so that's, I think that's the you know, it's great seeing new tools. It's fun seeing all the cool new stuff. But
Yeah.
the education around every corner is hard to beat that.
It's just for, you know, just to, as an explainer for people who haven't been to the show, it's not like these stages are in enclosed rooms. They're open stages in the hall. So you can literally just wander past and, you know, come across something that tickles your fancy and you go, "Ooh, that's interesting." And then you can just, you know, loiter around and take it all in and basically listen to the whole class, which is what I think is so beautiful, you know. Half the time you walk past one of these stages without any intent, and you go, oh, hang on a second, that sounds interesting. And then you just hop into the class, and it's no big deal at all. Like you said, it's so perfect for education, really.
Yeah, it's an ideal environment. And like you said, you can just walk up, and then, you know, there's just a class, and there's the theater, and it's open at the booths, not just the ones sponsored by the show, because the show sponsors a number of them. Hey, this is kind of interesting. You know, the last time I was at the show, they actually built a chapel, and they had a wedding photography stage, and they had like the doors of the chapel, and they had stained glass, and they had the whole nine yards, and they were staging, you know, weddings, and you could shoot them. And it was brilliant. I mean, they're very clever, the stuff that the folks from the photography show come up with, you know, and to have all these different stages. So if your real interest is studio lighting or flash, you've got a home there that you could just hang out in there for three solid days. And it's not like the same classes repeat. Like I never did I think six sessions or five sessions. They were all different. They're all different topics and all different stages and different places. And it's such a great learning experience. You know, it's a shame it's only once a year, but they're moving to London, right? So it was in Birmingham, and now next year they're going to be in London, right?
Yes,
and it's
absolutely.
Like, you're going to, I'm going to get the name wrong. It's not the O2. It's not there. It's at the E something.
It's at the XL.
You know what it is? That's it. The XL?
Yes, it's at the XL, which is a brilliant, you know, convention conference venue. It's huge. There's like a big corridor and lots of halls on either side. So it's massive. It's really easy to get to. Yeah, it's a brilliant venue as well. So, you know, I've been used to being at the NEC in Birmingham, but actually London is even closer because I'm just on the outskirts of London, so it's actually easy for me to get to.
Oh yeah.
Easier than this to Birmingham. So I'm looking forward to that. It'll be different, but I'm sure it'll be amazing nonetheless.
Yeah, it'll be nice. It'll be nice for it to be in a different venue, and there's enough people in London to fill that show without bringing anybody in from out of town, right? Such a huge city.
That's it. I mean, I'm really impressed by how far people travel to get to Birmingham. You know, friends of ours like coming over from Ireland, or like, you know, people traveling in from all over the world, really.
Yeah, I met people from Romania. It's one of the best shows, I think, on the planet. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I've never been to Imaging USA or WPPI, but how does a photography show compare to Imaging USA, for example?
Okay, so what I would say to you is, where it stands now, the photography show is bigger, is larger. Those shows used to be gigantic before COVID. They were huge. I think at one point WPPI, which is the big show in Vegas, was probably 300 to 400 booths or stands. Now they were 101 this year. So it's still a busy hall. There's still a lot of people there, but it's not the scale and scope. So at this point, I would say the photography show is probably 2.5 times vendor-wise larger than probably the biggest show in the U.S. right now. So it's quite a show. But it's a similar feel. Like if you walked in the hall, there's Canon, there's Nikon, there's Sony, there's Fuji. You know, it has that big feel. But what I've noticed is in the last couple of years, all of the vendors have scaled their booths down. Like the Canon booth used to be massive with a giant stage, and now it's not massive, it's medium. So everybody's kind of scaled back since the pandemic, at least in the U.S., because the stands were quite large at the photography show. But the U.S. doesn't have many shows anymore. I think we have maybe two big shows. Imaging USA is one of them. And WPPI, which is the wedding and portrait photography one. Those are the two big shows now. The big one in New York is gone. And last year, B&H Photo did their own event, which was really nicely done in the same hall about the same time. And they had a great crowd. It was in a five-story event pavilion, really nicely done. And they did, B&H did a tremendous job with it. I mean, it was a great, great conference. And it was free. It was just free. Like it was just zero. just come on in. It was
amazing.
It was packed, and it was fun. It is amazing, you know. But you know, B&H is such a powerhouse. You know, they can pull stuff like that, yeah, basically. And it was a great show. But I don't think they're doing it this year. I think it's going to be next year. So I'm not sure. I haven't heard any dates or anything. So who knows? But so far, you know, here we are almost into April, and our two big shows are over for the year.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we've lost a big show over here in Europe with Photokina in Cologne in Germany. That's
I've been there. Yeah,
it's been canceled indefinitely. And that was, you know, they canceled it. The show at the beginning of COVID, and then very quickly afterwards, you know, there was a message on the website saying we're not coming back. And of course, that was like, oh wow, okay, major disappointment there.
That was the biggest show I've ever seen. That was insanity. That show was crazy big.
Yeah,
every 2 years. They only did it every 2 years. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And I remember it was coming up, and it was supposed to come up in 2020, I think. And so, and I have relatives in Cologne. So it would have been easy. I'll just, you know, I'll hop over, stay with my family. But then it didn't happen. It was like, oh, dang it.
stupid COVID.
I know.
COVID screwed up everything.
Hey, let me just jump in real quick to tell you about the amazing sponsor of this episode, Platypod. Platypod offers innovative camera support systems designed to unleash your creativity. With their stable, versatile, and portable solutions, you can capture stunning shots like never before. And I'm not just saying that. As the host of the Camera Shake podcast, I can personally vouch for Platypod's incredible products. They've become an integral part of the show. In fact, I'm surrounded by various Platypod products holding up lights, cameras, microphones, and so on. It's really helped to transform the way I make the show and the way I shoot at home in the studio and on location. But don't just take my word for it. Explore Platypod's website at www.platypod.com to discover their range of products, including the Platypod Extreme, Platypod tripod heads, and the brand new handle, of course. Make sure to follow Platypod on Instagram and Facebook at Platypod Tripods for exclusive updates, tips, and giveaways. By choosing Platypod, you're not only investing in your photography, but you're also supporting the Camera Shake Photography Podcast. Thanks again to Platypod, our amazing sponsor. Platypod, where innovation never sleeps. We'll talk on education. Obviously, people know you as the man and the soul and the spirit behind Kelby One. How did you start in photo education, and what was your journey like?
Well, it started through Photoshop. So back in October of 1993, we wound up just kind of out of luck, just a lucky series of events, wound up hosting a Photoshop seminar. And I think it was kind of like the first organized large Photoshop seminar. Now, by large, we had 150-something people that paid to come to the event. But back then, there were no Photoshop seminars. Like, no, you know, we were stunned that that many people showed up. But that started a tour then. So, because that was in Tampa, Florida, and then we did Orlando, and then we did Jacksonville, Florida. Then we did Atlanta, Georgia. We started working our way around the country until we were doing 20, 30 cities a year. And then we wound up doing the UK. We went to Islington and did that seminars every year at the Business Design Center. We've done them in Birmingham at the NEC. I've done my seminars in Birmingham. We've done them in Cologne, you know. So it started this whole thing of teaching Photoshop. But those classes were strictly pretty much Photoshop. Later on, as digital photography started to take off, because people forget that during that time frame I'm talking to you about in the 90s and stuff, photographers weren't using Photoshop. It was graphic designers. It was a tool for professional graphic designers. They took images that were scanned, you know, and laid them out in brochures and magazines and stuff like that. And I was a full-time graphic designer at that point. I'd been a photographer first, and then my wife and I opened up a graphic design studio back in the early days when the Macintosh was fairly new and desktop publishing was just becoming a thing. And so we had launched a newspaper for Macintosh users in Tampa, Florida area. And we used to give it away for free at all the computer stores, because back then there was a bunch of computer stores. Big ones, big giant computer stores with huge traffic. And so we would give these away, and we used that newspaper to advertise our seminars, and that's how it took off. So years later, we went to Adobe. A few years after having these successful tours, we went to Adobe and we wanted to start an association for people who used Photoshop. So we founded in 1999. We founded the National Association of Photoshop Professionals, which just took off. It was huge. And we did that for many, many, many years. And then we started Kelby Training, which was just online classes. And then at one point, we merged the two. We had the National Association, which was poorly named, by the way, because we had people all over the world. But the national one makes it sounds like it's just a local thing. And then we had this Kelby Training, which was exploding, which was the online. And so we took NAP and Kelby Training and made them one. And that's where the name Kelby One came from. So it was all of the stuff that we do in one place. And so we consolidated the price and everything so it wasn't as expensive. And that's how it all came to be. So I've been basically training on Photoshop or photography since 1993. And I wrote my first Photoshop book in 1997, and then wrote my first Photoshop book in 99. And so since then, I have written 106 books.
No. Wow.
So now, I didn't write them all at once. It took me 20 years to write them all. And I just finished one. Just finished another book this week, a photography book. During the course of the year, I have a full-time, like all my staff at our office, I have a full-time editor and I have a full-time layout designer. And they've been with me, I don't know, 15, 17 years. And that's their job. Their job is to edit my books and lay out my books. And we deliver my books ready to go to press to the publisher. So that's been an important part of my life and my career is writing books. So that's something I love to do, and I always do it. And my son's a writer now, and so it's in the family. My daughter's a writer. It's in the blood, and so that's what we do. So it's all kind of tied together. It's funny how it all worked out. I wish I could say it was part of a master plan, but it was one lucky event after the next. So the only thing I would say is if a door opened up, we usually walked through it. So if there was an opportunity, we're like, hey, maybe we should be doing this. Maybe we should try that. And we tried some things that worked and some that didn't work. But overall, I have no complaints. I'm about as happy as I've ever been in my life right now. I'm just super enjoying life and enjoying photography. And I love all the new gear that we have. I love the AI stuff. I love all the I think it's just an amazing time to be a photographer. So it's very fun for me personally. It's a cool time to be alive in many ways. And in some ways, it sucks. But mostly, it's good.
I think you've timed it perfectly as well, with the back in the late 90s, for instance, the emerging technologies when it came to digital. The internet, coming to the forefront and things like Photoshop. I remember my first encounter with Photoshop was actually, I was tasked with designing the CD cover for an EP that my band and I recorded. And we didn't have any money. We couldn't afford to pay anybody to design a thing. And I've always been a little bit artistic in that respect. And I thought, yeah, I can do that. And my flatmate, or roommate, as you would call it, she had a PC with Photoshop on it, and it was like, okay, I can figure this out at least enough so I can make, I can like create a CD cover and a booklet type of a thing, and figure out how fonts work and all that, get all that kind of stuff. It's very, very rudimentary by modern standards, but I remember doing that and thinking, holy hell, like, this is cool, and that was it. And this was like, this must have been, let me see, 1998. So this would have been very early Photoshop for, 2.0 or something like that, like really early on. And then that was it. I was off. And as you said, in the beginning, it was mainly about graphic design. I don't know what it was. Was it a Kodak digital camera? It was probably 1 megapixel or whatever it was, if even.
Oh, yeah. The first one, yeah.
Yeah, I would take pictures of my dog, and I would cut my dog out and put it in another picture. I remember we had with neighbors, right? They were from San Francisco, and they were working for a U.S. company over here in the U.K., and they were living next door. And then after a couple of years, they moved back to the States. And so as a goodbye present, it's like a small village. And as a goodbye present, I went around and I took pictures of their house, which was like an old cottage, like a, you know, old typically English countryside cottage. When I went around, I took a picture of their house, and then I took pictures of all the neighbors, and then I pasted all the neighbors into that picture with Photoshop.
Oh.
I mean, I could have just gotten them all together and line up in front of the house. I don't know why I didn't do that. It would have been a lot easier. But I don't know. I like the challenge, you know? But it was just like these, and again, by modern standards, the final product of that looked pretty terrible. But back in the day, it was like, whoa, I could do that. Like, from home. What?
Right. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It was an amazing time. It was really, there was nothing like it before it. You know, it was pretty groundbreaking. It's funny, is what's weird is I got into Photoshop the same way. I wanted to do I was doing a newsletter for my band. So I was playing in a band full time. I had a band called Rumor Has It. And we did a newsletter. We'd say, here's the next four nightclubs we're playing. We'd play a week or 2 weeks at a time. We'd send it out to our mailing list. And I went one day to have it done. And I went to the same print shop. And they were like, oh, well, the girl that does our desktop publishing, she's out for the week. And I'm like, oh, no, I got to get this, like, done today. And I go, so is there not somebody else that can do it? And they go, oh, no, we use desktop publishing. It's like cutting edge. And I'd never heard of the word desktop publishing. And literally 2 days later, I'm driving down the road from work to home. And there is a sign out in front of a business called Do It Yourself Desktop Publishing. And I pulled in and I met the guy. He was super nice. And he goes, yeah, we rent you time on a computer. And we have Photoshop and PageMaker and Adobe or Aldus Freehand, it was called at the time. Mm-hmm. And he goes, and, you know, I'll get you up and running. And we have a laser printer and you'll be able to have something you can take to your print shop and they'll print. And I'm like, and I can do this now. And he's like, yeah, you can just sit there and type it in. And so I called my wife and said, honey, I'm going to be late. I'm at a do-it-yourself desktop publishing center. And I did it. I made our first newsletter. Now, I was particularly enamored with the ability to use fonts. Because up until that point in my life, it was a typewriter. So I will say this. My newsletter had a different font on every panel of it. So it looked like a ransom note somewhat. But anyway, I did it. And that was it. I was hooked. And then I wound up becoming friends with the guy that owned the place. I bought my own Macintosh computer. And he was the first guy to teach me Photoshop. That was it. And then I wound up opening a graphic design business based on the Macintosh computer and all that. But up until that point, I'd only used, you know, Windows PCs and Photoshop was not even available. It was not on the PC. It was Macintosh only. So, that's how I got my start. Very similar kind of thing where for my band, I needed to create something and I was not a graphic designer. But, you know, I just felt like I could do it.
Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, like I said, you know, yeah, back in the day, I didn't have any money to do it. And, you know, it's one of these things, you know, we were living in London at the time, and it's like, okay, I can probably find an artist who can create, an album cover for me, but that will just take time, and unfortunately, the artist times back in the day, those ones that did it for free were also ultimately totally unreliable. So this would, you know, it would have been, it just would have been a major, major effort. And so I just went, you know what, there's a computer that's got this thing on it called Photoshop. I mean, how hard could it be?
You know? Come on.
Yeah. Turned out it wasn't that. And actually, you know, I saw that cover actually not too long ago. I found an old CD in the attic, I think. And I looked at it and I'm thinking, you know, that's not that bad. I mean, actually, the font's pretty cool. The background image was the image of the footprint on the moon. Remember? It was Armstrong or whoever. Famous image, and it was like, I sort of tinted it to ink blue, and it was pretty damn cool. It was called Grand Funk Central. That's a funk record. Awesome.
Ah.
Yeah, it was funky as heck. But yeah, so it was, you know, it was good. The band was called Moon Hot Monkey Paste, hence the connection to the moon. I thought I'll pick something that has some reference to that.
Very clever.
Yeah. I know. That's back in the day. I mean, that band name was slightly weird. This do you remember Ian Dury and the Blockheads?
I do not.
Big English artist band in the back in the 70s and early 80s, I guess. They had an album, very successful album, called Hot Boots and Panties. It's quite eclectic, pop rock with some, I don't know. Yeah, it was quite very eclectic. Ian Dury is quite a character. But the Blockheads keyboard player, Ed Spade, was an instructor at the music college that I went to. And he was one of these like really bizarre musical geniuses that could, like, he was, I don't know, somewhere on some kind of spectrum. I mean, totally, maybe too much drugs, I don't know, through the 70s, who knows. But he was like, he was a very bizarre, unique character, let's put it this way. He would, like, just walk around and go, he was just mumbling all the time. It's like, and, you know, like, something dropped on a keyboard and the door to the classroom would fly open. He'd stick his head in. He goes like, oh yeah, it was an F sharp minor 7, flat 9, sharp 11, flat 13 that you played there. And you see that bit of keyboard and you go, what? it was. You know? So one of these kind of musical genius types, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember one day, like, we're outside the entrance of the college and we're like, you know, debating what our band name was going to be. You know, when they're coming up with ideas, like, not agreeing on anything. And Ed Spade walks out the door and he's just grumbling and mumbling. And he just goes, all right, there's a moon hot monkey paste. And he walked off like some pirate. And we're like, was he just, did he just say moon hot monkey paste?
Monkey paste.
Yeah. And we're like, all right, well.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah. Hey, awesome.
Monkey paste.
Eureka mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it worked. It worked. But yeah, because I know you're a music nut yourself. I see you with the Eddie Van Halen t-shirt. I appreciate that. Big Van Halen fan, obviously. And you're in your recording studio, right?
Yeah, I have a studio at the house. I can give you a little interesting. Let's see what's over here. Bunch of guitars and stuff.
Whoa.
Right? And then on the other side, well, a bunch of guitars and stuff and keyboards and stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it's for fun. It's just, you know, it's my hobby. It's what I do at night. You know, I'm not playing with Photoshop. But you know what I do? I can share my screen, right?
Yeah, sure can.
All right, are you ready for this? If I can find, I think I can find this actually fairly quickly. I'm going to show you a picture of my band from the 1980s. So this is the band I was in when I learned all this stuff, and this is not going to go well. But I'm going to show you a picture. Here we go. I already found it. How was that? I didn't expect to be that. All right, and let me go share my screen.
So if you are listening to the audio version of this podcast, remember that it's a fully fledged video version over on YouTube, and you can just head over there and you'll see that picture.
Yes.
Right.
You'll see me in my 1980s, and you will see my wife, who is the singer. She's my wife of 35 years this year, and she has big, big hair. Big 1980s massive hair. It weighed 45 pounds just on its own. Big hair.
Oh, wow.
And I had all my cool stuff. I had my gloves with the fingers cut out.
Hey.
I had my skinny tie, you know. So in that band, I was keyboard player, so I was playing keyboards back then. Because if you were in the 1980s and you had keyboards, you worked all the time. Because
yes.
Everything was keyboard synthy-based back then.
Yeah.
Like it is now.
yeah, no difference there. You probably had more work in the 80s as a drummer than you had consequently in the 90s. But, you know, that's a different thing.
And you know what? I gave up. I was a drummer first. So that's where I started and went through school. And in college, I switched from drums to keyboards because I was tired of being in the back of the room. I was always in the back. Like, there's all these pictures of our band playing, and you can't even see me. Like, I'm always covered up. It's kind of an ongoing joke with my old band from school because we still play. We still do our high school reunions. But yeah, I was always, like, buried way back in the back. And, you know, I was born to be 4 feet in front of myself. I've got to get up closer.
And it's, I've seen you now play guitar and sing in your band, is that right?
I do. Now I'm not the lead singer. So my wife is an unbelievable singer, like ridiculous, like seriously incredible range. Like we never ever found what the top of her range was. She could sing anybody, Mariah Carey, whatever it was. She nails. She's a great, great, great singer. And I sang backup, and I know the songs I can sing lead on, you know. So I was probably good for 6 or 7 songs a night, but I was never going to be the only guy singing, you know. It's like, but you know, I can sing harmony, and you know, I find the songs that I can do, and you know what else is weird? This is, don't tell anybody. This is weird, but I'm actually a really good rapper.
Oh wow!
But this is back before everybody rapped. Like everybody raps now, but back in the day, yeah. I could really. Like, you'd walk in the club and you would not know. You'd be like, I can't believe that's you. I would hear it all the time. People would stop me and go, I can't believe that was you up there. I'm like, I know. So listen to this. I went on a cruise ship like a couple of years ago. And it was this really nice, you know, high-end cruise ship. It was with my brother and with a friend who invited me. And they had a karaoke night. And so I went up for karaoke night. And they let you pick songs, right? And so I picked Funky Cold Medina by Tone Loc. Now, nice. It's a nice cruise. I'm in a suit, right? And I got a tie and a white shirt. I look very like me. And I got up there and I knew I can rap. Nobody knows this is my secret superpower. I get up there. I tore that ship down. I was a celebrity for the rest of the cruise. People would be stopping me like, dude, you're the rap guy. Nobody saw it coming. Nobody. That's my superpower.
Well, tell you what, next one we meet, I'll bring some beats, and then.
Yeah, drop a beat. I'm there, dude. I can rhyme on demand, but you know,
that's really hard.
Covers. Yeah, it's a stupid superpower, and it's completely useless in real life. However, it is that one thing I don't tell anybody: secret rapper.
You also, you know, as a rapper, you clearly need a rapping name. So do you have a rapper name I'm Hippopotamus or
yes.
Rhymenosaurus or something?
No, I'm Plain White Rapper.
Oh, Plain White Rapper. Cool.
Yeah, like, you know, you put something in a Plain White Rapper.
Oh, yeah.
That's like a WRAPPER, yeah. But I'm RANS.
Plain White Rapper.
Awesome. I also thought of using Lil Hungry, because I'm always a little hungry. So Lil Hungry is my other rap name.
That's great. Yeah, you definitely need a rap name, 100%.
Yeah, it's either Plain White Rapper or Lil Hungry.
So here's a challenge for you. Next year at the photography show, I'd like to see you teach a class in rap. The whole way through.
Look, you got to be born with it, man. Wow. It's got to be. It's in here. It's in here. If you want it to come out here, it's got to be in here. Well, this thing's really gone off the rails. This podcast is totally, it's so far away from photography at this point. I'm not even sure it's a photography podcast.
I think that's the USP of this podcast. You know, very often, like, you know, you consider yourself lucky if we even scratch the topic of photography sometimes.
I don't have a camera in here. I have no camera gear in this room. It's all music. I got nothing.
See, isn't that interesting, though? Because I've had this type of conversation with a number of guests in the past, and I find this really interesting that, you know, particularly in photography, it does seem to be the case that a lot of photographers that I've spoken to also somehow have a connection or a deep connection with music, whether they're musicians themselves. A lot of the time, that's true. I can't even count the number of people who are really excellent musicians. Frank Dohrhoff, for example.
Frank smokes, man.
Yeah, he's killer. We did say that we're going to have to do an episode where we only talk about guitars. This will be an extra episode.
Oh, yeah. All right. So you know what I did? I did a cool thing a few years ago. Actually, this is kind of cool. Because what you're saying is so true. How many photographers are also musicians? So I did a series of portraits of photographers who are musicians, and I did them backstage at a concert. So I set up a rig. So, and I did it intentionally so you could see road cases and gear. And then you could also see the light stands and the soft boxes, right? I did the whole thing and shot it where you could see the backdrop. You could see the edges of everything. So it would mix music and photography together. And so it looks like a behind the scenes shot, you know, and I called it sessions, like a recording session or a photography session. And I did all these portraits of all these great musicians that were, I mean, great photographers, famous photographers who are also, you know, musicians. And it's funny, one of the guys that I did, Drew Gurian, who used to be Joe McNally's full-time assistant, you know, he's gone on to be a famous entertainment photographer. Like, he's huge here in the States, and he's a drummer. And I got a great picture of him backstage. I did them all as duotones. I did them all as black and white and then duotones where he's holding a cymbal. So he's holding the cymbal. And I would show you if I could share screen, but I have a really nice portrait of him. And I have all these different music. But there's so many photographers who are great musicians in their own right. And in fact, at Photoshop World, we were doing them live before COVID. We used to have a jam session. And we would bring up all these instructors like Frank Duer. That's where I learned Frank could smoke on guitar. I had no idea. And Frank smokes.
Frank's great.
And all these, and like Mark Heaps is a great bass player and guitar player. And Rob Foldy, who is a, you know, quite of a famous, sports photographer who I met, you know, shooting an NFL game on the sidelines and wound up being the team photographer for, you know, the Atlanta Falcons and for all these big teams in America. He's out on tour playing drums right now with a big country star. He sends me these pictures. He's played these giant arenas and he's got all these behind the scenes shots and stuff. And yeah, I mean, it's a really neat how people that are creative are not just always creative in one vein, right? They're creative in photography and there. And it just seems like such a natural thing for a musician, you know, to be a photographer and vice versa. You know, and I mean, look at Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney just had an exhibition in London of his photographic work. And one of my buddies bought me a book on it. He bought me a book. My buddy Kelly got me this book of Paul's photography. And it's tremendous. He has pictures like he chronicled the Beatles in their 1964, trip to America. And his photos they're stunning. I mean, it's like, it's really, really good stuff. And so it's the crossover is very strong.
It's likewise, Stuart Copeland, for instance, is an amazing photographer.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
You know, so
Brian Adams.
Brian Adams, exactly. I think he owns multiple photo studios, as far as I know.
Yeah.
You know, so interesting. It's really interesting. I mean, even, you know, I remember hanging out with David Bergman up in Norway a little while ago, and it turns out
there's
one thing I didn't know, but he's a drummer. You know, or used to be percussion.
Right,
drummer.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. So it's funny how that connects. And it's like you said, you know, it seems to be like not necessarily that unusual. Well, I mean, it shouldn't be unusual for creative people to do creative things, I guess, you know. And so music is, you know, a pretty obvious creative thing to do. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, and it's so darn easy. Music is just so easy.
Yeah.
Especially guitar, so easy.
Oh, guitar's the easiest thing to play.
It is not. It is very hard. Music is hard. I've been doing it my whole life. It's still hard. Especially guitar. I started guitar late and it's hard. Drums are easy. Bass is easy. Pianos can be easy. Guitar is just stupid. It's very hard.
Yeah, guitar,
but you're really good at it. You're brilliant at it, so it's like nothing. You know, it's like, oh, you mean this? You know, like,
yeah, I mean, guitar is one of these things. I think that there's a point where it becomes almost like an extension of your body in a weird way, you know. And then
all of
a sudden, it's you know, it takes a while. But I started playing the guitar when I was six or seven, so I don't actually remember a time when I didn't play the guitar. So it's, you know. Yeah. And then I haven't really played a lot over the last, I mean, the last 10 years, I have to say, I haven't played that much in comparison to what I used to play. You know, I used to play, I don't know, 10 hours a day or something before that. But I haven't done anything like that. over the last 10 years. So it's always, I enjoy getting back on it. And then, you know, I'm always surprised how, yeah, you get a little rusty, but actually you don't really forget that much. And it still kind of feels somewhat natural, you know, to an extent.
Yeah, that's the way I feel about drums. You know, like I can sit behind a set of drums I haven't played in a year and I can just go. It's like I don't have a, I don't, you know, but guitar, I'm always like, I better warm up. I better do stuff. I better pray. I better do something to get me through this gig. I better do something. Like if you look at my Twitter bio list, you know, I'm this and that and the other. And the last line is, and struggling guitarist. So yeah. I wish I had taken guitar up when I was six. When I was six, I was taking a stick and banging it against a rock. I had, you know, I was like, ooh, grunk, you know, so I wasn't playing guitar, and I didn't start till I was like my 30s and didn't take it up seriously till I was in my 50s. So I'm still, you know, I'm still struggling along, but I love it. It's a lot of fun, but I would never call it easy. It's like, you know, it's easy, everything but guitar. I'd rather squeeze toothpaste back into the tube. That's easy compared to playing lead guitar. Regular guitar, like a rhythm's okay, but lead guitar is like, you know, and that's your thing. You're a studio musician. You lead, playing leads was how you got your check. Here you go. Thanks for playing.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know, the thing about, I mean, it's interesting because I spent about 25 years or something being a studio musician, and I'm not a very good reader. So I'm really not, despite the fact that I went to music college, I'm a disastrous reader. By comparison, I'm not a very good reader. And I remember through a sequence of coincidences, whatever, I ended up running a music center with several orchestras and jazz bands and big bands and all sorts of different choirs and, you know, classical, traditional orchestral ensembles, basically. And all the instructors there were classically trained, and it just... the ease with which they could read the most complex music just blew me. I mean, that's, you know, talk about imposter syndrome. There you go, like, what am I doing here? Like, these people are incredible, right? But if at any point anyone was asked to, like, okay, here's an 8-bar section, just improvise, they'd be like, oh, everybody would run scared in the room. They'd be like, what? Improvise? What, without dots? What? There's nothing in it? What? I'm supposed to make it up? And I'd be like,
yes, that's hard.
That, you know, but to me, I was like, I can improvise all day long. Like, you know, I can't
write. See,
for love of money, but I can play. You know,
I'll take the improvising over the reading.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's where the fun is. That's where the, I mean, otherwise you're just repeating somebody else's exact notes, right? It would be like if you're a photographer and all you can do is shoot something from the same exact spot and the same exact height using the same exact settings as the last person. And the only way to be successful at it would be to do it exactly as they did it.
Yeah.
Right? That would be the and the other one is you can be creative and come up with new things and just, you know, just let yourself flow and come see with what you come up with. That's improvising, right? That's where I think that's the most fun for me as far as any instrument goes, whether it's drums or whatever. You know, it's not the playing the, you know, basic pattern. It's not playing chords.
Yeah, and it's this thing where, you know, music really, you know, becomes a language. And when you're in a room with a bunch of musicians, you know, and you communicate in a different language almost, you know, that we all understand, like the language of music and sound. And we're having this really great conversation. You know, that's something where you kind of bond with another person on a completely different level. That's what I've always found. You know, and I remember I used to play with the same drummer for about near enough 10 years or something, 8 years or something like that, from college. Then we, you know, the band then continued after college and stuff. And it really got to the point where I knew exactly what he was going to play. I knew how he was going to react to whatever I was going to play and vice versa. You know, and it was just beautiful to perform together and then just have these moments of complete connection and communication musically, you know, on stage. And, you know, and sometimes things would come off the rails or, you know, you'd make a mistake and you'd laugh about it afterwards because it'd be like, that was funny. I mean, what happened there? You know, and it's like, it's not, you know, when you're a kid, you do something wrong. You go, oh my God, I played this wrong. But there's a point where you get to this point where you think like, oh, wow, you know, it was just, I could not see that coming. That was hilarious, you know, whatever happened there. And it becomes this thing like where we have a laugh about it, you know, and it's just fun. It's just really, really fun to just be in a room with other musicians and to like to just communicate, connect like that. And I find, with music, with photography, it's the same thing. You know, video, it's when it all comes together. It's just a beautiful thing. And this is the beauty. Just kind of circling back to things like the photography show, for example, is that, you know, you spend so much time as a photographer being on your own or working on your own, that when you get the opportunity to come together with lots of other creatives, there is this sort of thing where, you know, the sense of connection there immediately. This is what I always find about the photography show. There are people that I literally see only every year, or in this case, after 18 months. And you come together and it's like you never left. It was like we just walked out of the last photography show, you know, yesterday. And it's like big hugs and, you know, everybody's there to do the same thing and everybody's on the same level. It's just a beautiful kind of connection on a creative level.
Yeah. And I think if people haven't done it, I don't think they realize what is so great about it. So wait a minute. You walk around and there's a bunch of vendors and it's crowded and it's noisy. And then there's some people teaching. And it's like, until you do it, then you're like, this is what's happening at that place at that time is special. It's a really neat experience. And I think if you haven't done it, it's very hard to imagine what it's like. Because you think it's one thing, but when you get there, you realize it's way more than it appears on the surface.
Yes, and I think this is possibly a misconception as well, where people think like, well, you know, I don't want to spend any money. Like, I don't want to drop a few thousand quid or bucks, you know, on a new lens or something. Squid, as we call it. Couple of thousand squid, you know, on a new lens or something. But the fact of the matter is, it's if you only go into the photography show to get a bargain or to buy a new thing, you know, then you're really, in my view, you're almost missing the point. You know, it's that connection part that's so beautiful. You know, you can call it networking. Of course, there's a degree of that going on, but really, it's just making connections with other people and friends. I've made friends with so many people, you know. Just by going to the show every year, you know, meeting the same.
Oh yeah, it's community. It's, you know, it's everybody getting together. I never go to a show thinking I'm going to buy something. That doesn't mean I haven't bought stuff, but I don't go in there thinking, oh, I want to buy something, because you can buy something on Amazon or wherever anytime. Yeah, you can buy stuff immediately. So it's not like, you know, but you know, I've been there and you'll see a show special and you're like, oh, that's a pretty good deal, you know. So you wind up buying some stuff. But I went to the NAMM show out in California right before COVID hit. It was 2020 January, before COVID hit the US, and I went to the NAMM show and I had no intentions of buying anything, and I came home with an Ibanez guitar. It's sitting, it's hanging on that wall right over there. But I didn't go there thinking I was going to buy anything, but I just fell in love with that guitar. But it's the same thing with photography. I don't go there thinking I'm going to buy something. That's never my intent in going to a show. I want to experience the event. It is an event. It's a special event. It's all these people coming together that all have something in common. We all have a shared love of photography. A lot of us are equipment nerds, and we like to see all the new stuff. I like to stay on top of what's happening educational wise, technology wise, social media wise. I just like to see what's happening. And when you're there, you know, you're seeing the latest of everything. You're seeing stuff that's not even released to the public yet. They'll show you things. Here's something we're working on. We think it'll be out this summer. You know, take a look. What do you think? Give us some feedback. You know, there's so many facets to the show, you know.
Yeah.
It's very, very unique.
And there's certain things you don't really realize until you actually, you know, hold whatever it is in your hand. I remember I went to talk to Sony, and they just released a new 300 2.8. And just holding that, I mean, you look at it on the photo and it looks like, okay, well, that looks like a really cool lens, you know. Okay, it looks like any other lens, pretty much. Until you realize when you hold it in your hand that it weighs practically nothing, and you go,
ooh.
Okay, you know, I've just spent, I remember, you know, not too long ago, I was on a boat, on a speedboat in Norway, shooting sea eagles with a 300 lens, and I felt like I had to work out to lift that thing up all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I just holding that new soyuz, going like, you can do this with one hand. This is it's unbelievable, you know?
Right.
So it's you wouldn't be able to have that experience. I realized that if you weren't there and actually holding that thing up, you know, there is that element to it. So it's fantastic. I mean, you know, I never go to the show with the intention of spending any money. I may have come away with a really awesome hand painted backdrop this time around, but again, it was one of those things. You know, I felt it. You know, and it was like, this is good.
I didn't buy anything. I didn't buy a single thing. I bought lunch. That's it. I didn't buy a T-shirt. I didn't buy, usually now a friend of mine gifted me a T-shirt, so I was lucky there.
Right.
But I didn't buy a single thing. I didn't buy a single thing. The T-shirt I got was a rugby T-shirt. It wasn't even a music T-shirt. But I don't think that it has nothing to do with whether you want to buy something or not. That's not the reason to go. I would even take that off your list. I would say, why do you go to a show? If you ask me, you know, what are your top five reasons? None of them would be to buy something.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I just want to cut into your travel photography as well, because I promised it at the beginning. We're going to talk a little bit about travel photography. Now, we had a conversation on the show, or at the show, about a photo walk that you're planning potentially in Scandinavia this year. And that just got me thinking, what is it about photo walks that you enjoy the most?
Well, it's the people. I mean, it's a social event. A photo walk is a social event. And 14 years ago, I started this thing called the Worldwide Photo Walk. And it's spread all over the world to over 1,000 cities. And on one, usually it's the first Saturday in October, we get together in literally like 1,000 cities around the world. I mean, everywhere. China, all over Asia, all over Europe, the United States, everywhere you can imagine. We all walk for 2 hours. And there's a local leader in each city that says, okay, I'm going to lead the walk in Paris. And there may be 9 walks in Paris. There may be one that starts at the Sacre Coeur, and one that starts on the Champs-Élysées, one that starts in the Champs-Élysées. It's just, you know, they'll go and they pick their route. They go for 2 hours and you usually end at a cafe or a place to have lunch or dinner, depending on what time you do it. And it's just a social event. It's strictly you're walking around with other photographers, chatting and making friends. And that's really what it's about. And we use the whole thing to raise money for an orphanage in Kenya. Very, very small orphanage. It houses 51 people, built from the ground up by people who've donated to this over the years. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that they do. It's they've given their whole lives to build this orphanage and take care of these great kids. And so every year, that's our main fundraiser, is the thing we do. And so each year, what I do is I pick a different city around the world to lead a walk in, because there's going to be, you know, maybe 1,000 cities, and I want to lead one of them. And first couple of years, I did it in my own hometown, right? You know, which, and I realized that's boring. I could use this as an excuse. So I've led walks in Rome and in Venice and in, you know, well, Rome and Venice and Paris and Prague and just all over. I've done them in London. I've done them just, I did one in Edinburgh a couple years ago, and Innsbruck, Austria. And just every year I pick a different city. I did Cuba. I did Havana, Cuba this last year. And this year I'm in the running is perhaps, I've been to Copenhagen before. It's wonderful, wonderful town. But I was only there for like a day or so. A buddy of mine was in town doing work, and I always wanted to go, and so I flew in for just like a weekend. But this would be a chance for me, and I meet a bunch of my friends there. So we have this group of people. There's like 9 or 10 of us that come together every year at the photo walk. We do the photo walk, but then we all do photography. And it's rare, because most of my travel photography is done with my family, right? We're on vacation, and you know, we're seeing something. And so this is where it's just strictly, we're just shooting photos and having fun and eating great food. And so we all get together, and it's the same folks. Unfortunately, one of the guys passed away this past year, so it'll be the first time that he doesn't get to go with us, but it was very sad. But the rest of us will carry on, and we just have a great time and enjoy each other's company and take lots and lots and lots of photos. And Dave Williams is one of the guys. You know Dave. We did that workshop with him in Norway. And so Dave usually is with us. He was with us in Edinburgh driving like crazy because he is a trained stunt driver. So that's what it is. And so this year, you know, I'm thinking, where do I want to go? Either that's someplace I had never been or someplace I want to go back to. And I was thinking Stockholm, and then I was thinking, no, Copenhagen. Copenhagen's lovely. I mean, it is very lovely. And I have like one or two photos from there. I didn't really, you know, my buddy was there on work and I didn't really go out and shoot it like I want to. So I've always wanted to go back and had a lovely time. I mean, the people in Copenhagen, the locals are very, very lovely and welcoming. It's not cheap. It's not a cheap place. It's on the more expensive places you can go. Like there are places you can travel right now, wonderful cities that are ridiculously dirt cheap, dirt crazy cheap. Prague,
yeah,
Prague, where you get a beer this big and it's $1.
Yeah,
it's actually less than that. It's actually less. It's for a U.S. dollar, so or a euro, 1 euro. That's crazy for a big beer, right? You know, Cuba, Havana, Cuba was ridiculously. So we would go to this rooftop restaurant, and they would give you a keg of beer, like a big keg that would sit on your table, and it had a tap, and you could just pour beers after beers after beers. Like a big keg with a big ice flute down the middle of it. So it was ice cold, and it was huge. It was $6.
Oh, wow.
It was $6 for a keg on your table, right? And so Prague is like that. Lisbon is like that. There are places that you can go. Budapest like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
You go to places and they're so inexpensive, but then you go one country over and it's like, I'll tell you what the most expensive place, Norway.
Oh, yeah.
Goodness gracious. You like lunch and you're like, you need to send a credit card statement beforehand to prove you can afford it. Norway is crazy. Like Paris, I don't think is crazy. It's expensive, but it's not crazy.
Yeah, Scandinavia in general.
Crazy.
Yeah, Scandinavia in general is expensive. Like, you know, Sweden, Norway, Finland.
Yes. Yes. Crazy expensive. Yeah. But you know that going in.
Yeah, no, that's true. And see, anything that's got any alcohol in it is all of a sudden like super mega expensive. Like in Norway, I think you have to go to like a special, I can't remember what it was called. It was like a special government-run store. So they don't have any, so we call them over here in the UK, off-licenses where you can buy wine and, you know, stuff.
Yep.
They have very special shops that are government-run where like the equivalent bottle of wine is like twice the price compared to like the UK, for example. You know, and it's pretty nuts.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. So there are places you can go that are very inexpensive, but man, there's a couple that'll really kick you in the butt. Cause you know, you can go to Paris. If you want to go to Paris and go on the cheap, you can.
Yeah.
You can, you don't have to eat at the fancy restaurant. You can eat great food and you can stay in clean places.
Yeah.
For a reasonable amount of money. Paris is like London. You can do it as inexpensively or as expensively as you want. You can have it crazy expensive or you can have it reasonable. It's, you know, New York is the same way, except for New York and London do share one thing is your hotel room is going to be crazy expensive. Once you get past the hotel room, like the hotel rooms in London, very expensive. Yeah. Hotel rooms in New York, San Francisco, very expensive. Just you can look for a cheap one and you'll look away. You'll look a while. You got to get an Airbnb or something to kind of skirt that.
Yeah,
I got an Airbnb that was dirt cheap in London. I mean, literally right across from Buckingham Palace.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful place. Had the whole apartment to myself. Gorgeous. Could have slept six people. It was great. I walked out and I'm at the fence, you know, right there is the gardens around Buckingham Palace. And it was a great location and everything. And it was one third the price of a small hotel room. So there's still some bargains to be had there, but you got to work for it.
Well, we had a similar experience in Stockholm. My wife and I went to Stockholm last year, about exactly a year ago. I think it was sort of May last year. It was absolutely beautiful. We had an Airbnb in a suburban area. I was 20 minutes into the center of town, so it wasn't bad at all. A beautiful location, right by a lake, with a little, had a little cafe restaurant by the lake, so you get a breakfast.
Oh, nice. Sitting
by the, it was stunningly beautiful. So incredible that we completely fell in love with Stockholm, but also with those suburban areas. Because the first thing that we noticed as we were we're getting off the, we may have taken the wrong bus in the wrong direction, first of all, but then once we figured out the bus system there, it was actually that easy. But as we were walking up to our Airbnb, I noticed there were no cars on the road. Like, not only were there no cars on the road, there were also no cars parked on the sidewalk or anywhere. Like, if you come from the UK, you're used to cars being parked bumper to bumper.
Sure.
All along the street, everywhere, right? And so mm-hmm. we're walking through this area, thinking like, what is happening here? Like, where are all the cars? And then I think, maybe people are at work. And I was thinking, no, it can't be. It's a Saturday. Like, people must be at home. So where are all the cars? And then I was thinking, maybe all the houses have garages, But that was also not the case. And so there was a maximum of one car on a drive or something, but nothing like here. And then it sort of dawned on us that the public transport or the public transportation system there is so brilliant. There's a bus stop, there are bus stops everywhere, and there's like a tram and, a train and everything.
Yeah.
But people just don't feel the need for cars. And as a consequence, the roads are super clean. Like, kids play out in the street. And as a parent, you don't have to, don't have to be worried about your kids mm-hmm. getting run over. And you think, that's a pretty darn good place to live.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Stockholm's lovely, lovely, lovely.
Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. I love the whole, this sort of, I call it the aquatic lifestyle, this thing where, you hop on a water taxi and you hop on a bus and it's just like part of the same journey, We went to this, yep. We went to this Japanese spot. So here's the thing, right? So my wife is not a photographer at all. So when we go away together, we keep it pretty fair. So she will join me on some photographic excursion and, and accept the fact that I'll have a camera basically surgically attached to my right eye for a certain amount of the time. But in return, I'll also join in with the things that she wants to do, that I maybe wouldn't ordinarily do. So she wanted to go to this Japanese spa in Stockholm, which was amazing. It was on top of a hill overlooking the whole bay. It was incredible. And it's this whole thing where, you're not allowed to bring your own swimming trunks. You have to use one of theirs because nobody's allowed to wear any color, and everybody has to look the same in order to, dull the senses so you can get your inner zen and all that kind of stuff. In the beginning I thought hocus pocus, whatever, Actually, when I was there, I have to say it was pretty dang amazing. It was, you really came out super relaxed and super chill. It was actually a fantastic experience. But in order to get back from there, they sent us to a bus stop. Turned out it wasn't a bus, it was a water taxi stop. So you literally you're on the water and you wait for your water taxi to show up. And then, you just hop on that and that takes you all the way back into the city proper. And it was amazing. It's just a fantastic place to be.
It's like Venice, right? Like Venice.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Just like that. Super pretty city. Met up with a great photographer, a friend of mine called Sean Luthwaite. Out there, fantastic portrait photographer. It was Stockholm. Highly recommend it.
Highly recommend it.
And Airbnb.
Bring your checkbook.
Yes, do bring
it's
your
expensive.
Checkbook.
Expensive, but wonderful. A wonderful town, lovely people. And boy, do they speak English well in Stockholm. They speak English better than we do. I can't believe how on the money, because it's required from, grade 1 through 12. And man, they speak English. You expect them to kind of stumble through, but they're like, all right, you're going to take a left here, but then watch out because the road's going to split. And you're like, are you from here? You sound like you're from New Jersey. I mean, like they speak English like an American, not like a Brit. They speak it like they're from Tampa.
Yeah, the accents are really good. And you know what it is they don't dub movies or TV shows. Like they show like American TV shows. Let's say, I don't know, for example, let's take Friends, for example, or Family Guy or something.
Yeah.
But they'll show it with subtitles. And so you're constantly used to hearing the spoken English for the whole time. Whilst in Germany, for instance, where they also show lots of American shows, but they would dub them. And, you know, they're not like your typical sort of your stereotypical kind of Chinese dub. They're quite well dubbed. But, of course, when you grow up in Germany, you watch those shows, you're not really used to hearing spoken English. And so as a consequence, you end up with a much stronger accent. So I remember, I grew up in Germany, and so sometimes I can talk like this, ja, wenn er wohnt, ja, alles klar.
Yeah, it sounds legit, man.
Oh, yeah, super legit. Every time I go back to Germany, that's what my English turns into. I'm putting on the German accent even more, just to fall in line with the people. But so what's coming up? Over the next few months, I know you've got a few conferences. You got a Lightroom conference coming up very soon.
Have a Lightroom online conference coming up at the end of April, so that's coming up next. As soon as that's done, I head straight to Budapest. I'm doing a travel photography workshop. I take groups of 12 photographers, so it's 12 of us, myself and another wonderful photographer that goes with me as my co-teacher, and we spend 4 days in wherever, in awesome places. Right after that, the next month, I'm heading to Santorini, Greece to do another workshop. Then I'm going to head back to London to shoot an air show, I think, in June. In July, I was going to go to Italy with my wife, but now I think we're just going to put that off because we have our 35th wedding anniversary this year, and we're going to take a cruise all the way around Ireland, over to Scotland, down around England, and then we end in Norway. And then I leave in Norway. My wife flies home, and I go up to the Lofoten Islands and do a workshop with Dave Williams.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's coming up. So I have a lot of fun stuff, and I'm also going to do a workshop probably in June, because we're working on that right now, which would be starting in Venice and then taking a bus up to the Dolomites and doing that region and then back to Venice. So we're working on that right now. And so a lot of travel, I guess, for this year, doing these workshops. I love doing these workshops. They are a blast because, so picture, you got 12 people and they're all really into photography. They're all really nice people because for whatever reason, I've been very blessed that when the people come on these workshops, they're just the nicest, most gracious, fun people, right? So we all hang out together. We're shooting at dawn. We're shooting at dusk. We're in the classroom. We're having meals together. We're making friends. It's just four of the best days I can even imagine. I have the greatest time. It is a lot of work because we have a lot of stuff that we do behind the scenes and stuff, but we have the greatest time. It's just a blast. And so it's what I love doing. I do three. I did three last year. I'm going to do four, it looks like, this year with any luck. And it's, you get to go to someplace great, like Santorini, right? You get to go to this beautiful Mediterranean island with a group of photographers, and every day you shoot photos, you laugh, you have amazing Greek food. I mean, it's the greatest job on earth. It's the best. It's just the best. And then you get to pick someplace else. We were going to do Dubai this year. Dubai had been on our, until the Mideast war broke out, and I know that there'll be people that are just uncomfortable about going to any part of the Mideast during this. So we put off Dubai till hopefully when things calm down, maybe next year. That would be great. Dubai is an incredibly photogenic city, and it's a very fun city and interesting. And it's close to a lot of neat things too, like Abu Dhabi and the desert. And it's just, there's a lot to shoot there, and it's a lot of fun. And it's for people from America or from the UK, it's very, very, very westernized. Have you ever been there?
I've never been to Dubai in particular.
Have you ever been to Las Vegas in the U.S.?
I've never been to Vegas. I've come close, but not quite.
I was going to say, it's like if you took Las Vegas and you put it on the water, that's Dubai. It's right. Very much. And like I always tell Americans, whatever restaurant, like, and they go, what do you eat in Dubai? And I go, whatever restaurant that you eat at back home is already in Dubai. They're all there. All the restaurants you grew up with, all the ones in your hometown, they're already there. It's English is the most widely spoken language in Dubai. So you will not hear much Arabic at all. It's very, very different. And every hotel chain you're used to staying in, you know, the Hiltons and the Marriotts, and they're all there. The Ritz and the Four Seasons, and you know, it's just in the desert. It's crazy. It's on the water, and it's just, if you've never seen it, it's an amazing. Now it's easy for you to get there. There's flights all day long every day from London to Dubai. It's worth going. It's great for photography. Right outside the city, 20 minutes, and you're buried in sand dunes, and it looks like you're out in the middle of the Sahara. And there's water, and there's tall buildings, and there's just so much to see. I've been there a couple of times. Unbelievable destination for photography. Just absolutely, you know, incredible. They have huge photography competitions and huge trade shows, photography shows that happen in Dubai. The Prince of Dubai is a serious photographer. The Crown Prince is a serious photographer, and he wants to create Dubai as like a center for photography. So they've invested heavily in conferences and shows and galleries, and it's a very photographic place just in general. So top of the list there for flying from London. I mean, it's right there. If I could get to Dubai as easy as you would, I've been there 10 times by now.
Well, it sounds like a great idea. I love the desert. Why not?
Oh yeah, just don't go in summer, you know. Go right now. Like go in 2 weeks and you'll have perfect weather. If you wait till like July, it's very, very, very hot.
Crazy hot. Scott, thank you so much. It's been an absolute education. Thank you so much for being a guest on the Cameron podcast today.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. I wasn't expecting to get to touch on all the crazy topics that we did. That was a lot of fun.
Okay, folks, that's it for today. It was fantastic having Scott on the show. And as always, before we go, let me just recommend another episode that I think you'll like. Check out episode 153 with Tim Wallace. I'm sure you love it. If you enjoy our content, consider supporting us on buymeacoffee.com/CameraShake. To help us continue creating and bringing you more exciting episodes. It really does mean the world to us. And for those of you who are listening to the audio version of this podcast, did you know that there's a fully fledged video version over on YouTube with plenty of examples of our guest photography in full Technicolor? All you have to do is go over to YouTube, search for Camera Shake Podcast, and you'll be able to watch all past episodes on there. And if you're already on YouTube, well, just drop us a comment, hit the like button, ring that bell, and share with your friends. Your engagement really does help us reach a wider audience all over the world. Thank you for listening and watching. And remember, a new episode drops every Thursday. So make sure you mark that in your calendars. Until next time, keep shaking things up in the world of photography. See you next Thursday.